KBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media radio station.
This is a special report from ABC News. Government shutdown watch. I'm Richard Cantu. The third time was the charm, the House overwhelmingly passing a measure to keep the government open through next March 14th. Two previous attempts had failed.
The first one that he came to earlier this week was tanked by opposition from President-elect Trump and Elon Musk. The second didn't get the number of Democratic votes it would have needed to pass on the floor because it had a provision that Donald Trump wanted, a raising of the debt ceiling. This third one, cobbled together by Republicans late on Friday, did not have a raising of the debt ceiling.
ABC's Jay O'Brien. The measure now heads to the Senate. Majority Leader Charles Schumer.
There are a number of amendments that members have asked for. You know that amendments can draw out the process, but usually in these hours we come to an agreement on them, and that's what we're working to do.
The bill must be passed by the Senate tonight. This is ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section at WGBW.fm.
Bucks in Cleveland. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. After winning the NBA Cup, the Milwaukee Bucks are on the road tonight against the team with the best record in the Eastern Conference, the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Bucks are 14-11 after the break. The Cavaliers in first place at 23-4. Three former Bucks players named nominees to the Basketball Hall of Fame. Marcus Johnson, Terry Cummings, and John McLaughlin, and Coach Doc Rivers, also named a nominee. College basketball, the Badgers go back to work this weekend at the Kohl Center. They will host a Horizon League team, the Detroit Mercy Titans, at 1 o'clock Sunday afternoon. NFL, Packers practicing in the snow. There's a chance for some flurries Monday night when they host the Saints. Running back Josh Jacobs says he likes games in the snow.
I like the game just because, you know, cold games, snow games, because defenders don't really want to hit. It kind of make them make decisions. You got to kind of make a business decision at times, and it's easier for me because I'm going to make you have to make that decision.
That's Packers running back Josh Jacobs with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
The holidays are here, and there's no better way to celebrate than sharing our favorite holiday memories with all of you.
Ooh, holiday memories, that's a tough one. But I think with my own family, I just really enjoyed going to Mass, coming home, and Santa was there, and just surprising the kids and opening up gifts. So Christmas Eve was always a very, very special time at our home.
Hey, Jim, do you have any wise words for all of our listeners on WGBW and WISS?
For all the people who have supported Civic Media, just a happy holiday season to you and a very prosperous 2025.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Our last program of 2024, kind of a last moment of peace, of sanity before the chaos I expect in 2025. Today on the program, we're going to have an extended interview with my good friend, former Alabama Senator Doug Jones, about, you know, what's going on and maybe where we're going in the new year. I'm looking forward to that. But I wanted to throw out the best of holiday wishes to everyone as we lead into the actual holiday season. I wish everyone the best, the healthiest, happiest, most family-filled, most memory-filled holiday possible. Because this is why we work all year. We work all year to be able to enjoy our family, enjoy our time together. And look, you know, in the position I'm in right now, our family's in a bit of chaos. It's the holiday that's pulling us together a little bit. That want of joy and of goodwill and all of that, that means a little bit more this holiday season for us in the Smith household, especially for me personally. So, you know, more probably than I've ever felt, I want people to have a healthy, happy, and safe holiday season and a memorable one. You know, this is for us one of those opportunities to just kind of look back and go, hey, there's more to be an American. There's more to being part of a community than what hat we wear And it's this time of year that I hope we can be a little nicer to each other, maybe calm down a little bit and have an opportunity to maybe share a little of our hopes, our dreams, our wants, and all of that in a way that isn't going to be ugly, angry, hateful. But sadly, I know that Christmas dinners will be interesting. But it's my hope that we begin to look at each other just a little bit softer during the holiday. So I wanted to start today off by saying, look, we'll be back on January 6th. As you know, here at the show, we take the holiday off every year. This is our tradition. We will be replaying the last several weeks of programming and hoping that everyone has a great holiday. We will be back on January 6th because, of course, we will be back on January 6th. Don't expect a riot on January 6th. I think January 6th will be like any other Monday. I think work will get done. The work of government will continue, and we will not have to have a year of hearings over people acting the fool. That said, 2025 is going to be an interesting year. January 20th, I expect us to have the greatest economy ever. I expect eggs to be 99 cents and a gallon of gas to be a buck again. I expect rents to come down and insurance payments to come down. I expect utopia because that's what we were sold. That is what we were sold for Christmas. And we'll see if it happens. I'm kind of telling you it's not. Just a little sarcasm on that. I'm kind of expecting some really ugly things. But in the run-up to this holiday, I wish everyone the best. And I hope everyone does have truly the healthiest and the happiest of holidays, filled with memories, filled with opportunities to love each other a little bit more. And maybe even some of those people that we haven't gotten along with extend a hand. Because the next year, two, four are going to be challenging. And we're going to have to figure out how to reach out to each other, forgive each other, love each other a little more. If we're going to survive and ultimately on the other end, thrive. So again, I wish everybody the happiest holiday. If you got something you want to send to me, you want to say to me, email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Something I said over the year made you think, made you angry, made you happy, sad. rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back with former Alabama Senator Doug Jones.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, as I said, the electors met, cast their ballots. 13 fake electors cast ballot this time. So, the ones who tried to steal the system the last time, those Republicans who tried to steal the votes from Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Nevada. Well, they now cast votes as actual electors. I'll tell you how badly some of our systems are broken. And here to share some thoughts on, this whole process, what we can expect over the next several months, and, what Democrats can do to maybe save not just democracy, but our way of life. I've asked our good friend, former Alabama Senator Doug Jones, to come share some thoughts. Doug, thanks for coming down the show.
Rick, always great to be with you. Happy holiday to you, and I know you're going through a rough time, but we're going to all get through this.
I appreciate that. So what do you make of the peaceful vote? I got to tell you, if Trump had not won, I think this week would have been a little different. But what do you make of the Electoral College folks meeting and casting ballots and all that?
Well, it went exactly as I expected it would. It went exactly as it's supposed to be done under the Constitution. I'm no friend of the Electoral College anymore, but it worked. It worked the way it has worked now for close to 250 years. The interesting thing, obviously, is that it worked without a hitch, without a controversy, because Donald Trump won. As you said, had Donald Trump lost, I'm not so sure we would not have had some significant controversy. It is interesting to me that the MAGA world, and Trump in particular, believes the system works only when he wins. When there is ever a loss, there is something rigged, there's something stolen. They cannot fathom a loss like happened in 2020. So, look, the Constitution is in place. It is disappointing, for sure, but it is the result of a 250-year experiment that we call American democracy that is still continuing to work, at least up until this point. So there it is. Yeah.
No, what's interesting is that you brought up that now they think these are fair elections, because the polling now is saying that Republicans trust elections again, because as you pointed out, they won. And this, to me, is a lot of my red hats talk about kids getting participation awards. I would say this is the result of this back and forth, this pendulum of it's all broken, it's all great, is because, we never taught these kids how to be good sports. Sometimes when you lose, you learn a message from it, and you go on and you work harder to maybe not lose the next time. The poor sport party, if they lose, it's all about kicking and screaming and, storming the Capitol.
Yeah, and the thing is, Rick, this year you ended up not having any problems with these because, in part, Trump won the battleground states. And even though there were three of those battleground states that Trump won, that Democrats still controlled the Senate in Michigan, where Alyssa Slotkin won, Jackie Rosen, who won re-election in Nevada, and Ruben Gallego, who won in Arizona, went against the grain. Against the grain from Trump winning the state and then these Democrats won. But that tamped down any concern that those, folks like Carrie Lake could scream about that they were lost because of fraud. Donald Trump won. They're all in favor of this now. Polls will show that that Republicans have more confidence, and they will have more confidence in elections until they don't.
Right.
And they won't the next time they start getting behind in the polls. So, what I think is going to be interesting to see going forward is what does the Congress of the United States, if anything, to try to put into place on a federal level things that have been put in place in states like Alabama and Georgia and other places, purging voter rolls, doing away with early voting, maybe like Alabama just refuses to do early voting except for excused absentee. If they're going to try to do away across the board with drop boxes to make it more convenient to vote, I foresee the possibility that Republicans will try to install on a national level some of these more restrictive voting laws to try to suppress the vote going forward.
Yeah, how high do you think that is? Given the fact that I think this really is about a CEO administration, a billionaire administration, figuring out how they can privatize, profitize government and line their pockets. So how high on the list of priorities is, putting these major roadblocks on a federal level in front of voters?
Well, I'm not sure it's really high on the priority list at this point, but as we start seeing, as we get into this and as we see some of the effects and they see those poll numbers starting to dip, and I believe they will dip. I think the economy will take a dip. I think the poll numbers for Trump will take a dip. He's enjoying a honeymoon like right now he's never enjoyed. I think that's when they will start thinking more about, oh my God, what are we going to do? We're slipping in the polls. We may lose the House in 2026. The Senate will still be a tough map for Democrats in 2026. But as they start to see that, and governors start to see that, I think it will jump up on the priority list. And the thing that we got to be careful about, we've got to watch them trying to slide this in under the radar a little bit. Things that the Justice Department will do and not do. For instance, there's still a lot of voting rights lawsuits out there. What's the Justice Department going to say in front of these courts and in front of the Supreme Court to kind of gut the voting rights completely going forward? It's those kind of things that we've got to be on the lookout, not just the federal legislation, but what's going on in the court systems.
Well, let me ask you that, because you, as you point out, there are cases moving their way through. Is it possible that they just drop those, they just pull out from them and let them fall?
For sure. Or either come in and take a different position. Remember, a lot of these cases are brought by private parties. So they can realign themselves with the state. They can do a number of things. They can even take the position. Remember, Rick, there was one decision, and I can't remember, it was like out of the Eighth Circuit, that said that the Justice Department is the only entity that can bring a voting rights case under the voting rights law. Private litigants can't do it. That case is still floating out there. DOJ could come in and say, oh, that decision was correct. This case needs to go away because it was brought by an interest group and private litigants and not the Department of Justice, and we're not going to bring it.
So the question then is, obviously I wanted Matt Gaetz as Attorney General just because I think he's a caricature of a human being. But this Pam Bondi, I think she's probably maybe a little more dangerous than Matt Gaetz, because she had been, the Attorney General there in Florida. I think she understands the mechanism a little bit better, maybe, and is loyal to Trump as Gaetz ever was. Do you share my concerns?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, look, she is Matt Gaetz without the drama, without the circus-like atmosphere that surrounds Matt Gaetz. And to her credit, now she's a real lawyer. She was Attorney General of Florida. She has served as a lawyer, so she's got the legal pedigree. But in terms of what Donald Trump sees for the Department of Justice, I think that she is one of an acolyte who will agree that the department should just simply do Donald Trump's bidding, as opposed to be a somewhat independent. And Rick, people talk about DOJ being totally independent. They're not totally independent. They never have been totally independent. But you have to exercise independence in making certain decisions. You cannot just willy-nilly investigate, the president's enemies. You can't do favors for the president's friends. So there is that element of independence in making certain decisions. But in terms of policy and the way the department's handled, it's part of the administration.
Right.
I think she's going to take it to a different level that we haven't seen since Watergate and before.
Well, this is what I was going to ask you. You said they're not. And I said, well, not until now, because, Trump is going after the press right now. You saw the settlement with ABC News. You see that he's going after the Des Moines Register and that pollster who, predicted a poll that showed him losing Iowa, claiming election interference. There seems to be, the retribution tour that Trump wants to engage in, and going after anyone who speaks ill of Dear Leader. And the DOJ and Pam Bondi, I think, will be the tip of that spear. Do you share my concern?
No, I do share that. I mean, I significantly worry about subpoenas for the media, challenges to licenses for unfriendly media to the president. I think that is going to be something that has to be very, very carefully looked at. The lawsuit that was directed at the pollster who was working for the Des Moines Register, Trump did that individually. But I think it is just what we're seeing, is a typical bullying tactic. And I am, the ABC, to capitulate the way that ABC did without even any semblance of a challenge is just really setting a horrible precedent.
So the question is, was that Disney's doing or was that ABC's doing? Because, you know, as I understand it, Disney's like, well, you know, we don't want to, as I'm seeing this, now this is just my observation, this is my opinion, but it seems to me that Disney's like, you know, we don't need the hassle of the president coming down on us. We just got done, you know, fighting with the governor. You know, let's just sleeping dogs, we'll pay a little bit, make him happy, we'll calm the waters a bit. You know, never mind that whole Fourth Estate stuff. It's better for business just to kind of settle. That's sure. My take on it.
No, look, I don't disagree. There are a lot of potential business reasons to settle a case like that, including the fact that they would likely spend more money on legal fees, win or lose, than they would in that settlement. That said, when you're dealing with certain cases like this, there are intangibles that you can't put your finger on with regard to a settlement. This settlement reaches far beyond just simply a business decision. Granted, I think that's what they made was a business decision, but at the same time, part of that calculation was, this is going to be the president of the United States. We just don't need to get on his bad side, and the word go. Let's just get out from under this thing. And I guarantee you, had they not settled that case, I do not believe that Donald Trump would have sued the pollster with the Des Moines Register.
No, I agree, because I think, one, it's about the shakedown, you know, because I think a good con man knows a good shakedown when he gets it. But it's also what authoritarians do. It's silencing any critics, and we can expect, because of this, and we'll see what happens with Gannett and the Des Moines Register and this pollster, but I do foresee, you know, him doing a lot of this attempt to silence critics, because again, as I said, this is what authoritarians do. This is what wannabe dictators do.
Yeah, and think about this, Rick. Let's carry this forward. Now, you know, look, I think that in the ABC case, there were some comments that were made that I probably shouldn't have been made. Did they rise to the level of a $15 million settlement? No, because this was so widely distributed anyway. But think about the ramifications of the pollster. A pollster who routinely does polling for a newspaper. Are they going to be chilled from presenting any poll relatively close to an election that is not favorable to a candidate? Because if Donald Trump can win a lawsuit against this, so can anybody else.
Yeah, and the funny part of this for me, Doug, is he won. He won the election. This is the epitome of poor sportsmanship. This is the epitome of being a sore winner.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like that poll affected Iowa or even the election. Now, there were, you know, legitimately, it was a bombshell when it came out, and it must have been clearly off base somehow, some way. But it wasn't done. There's no way they can prove that it was done with malice or anything like that. And unless they change the law, he doesn't have a prayer. You know, he doesn't have a prayer in winning the case, yeah. But it will cost something to do that. And he's got money behind him, not only personal, but if Elon Musk wants to finance it, then he can do it. Yeah. That's part of the problem right now. When you've got, we're seeing the same problem, Rick, with these Senate confirmations. When you've got certain senators like Senator Tuberville from Alabama, essentially echoing what the transition team is and Trump are saying, is that if Republican senators don't go along with my nominees, we may primary them. And he's got Elon Musk with a checkbook standing behind that. That is a whole new world that we're living in. It's not a good one, because it is basically saying you don't follow your duty as a United States senator, or else I've got a checkbook that I'm going to write and I'm going to get you out of the United States Senate. That's not how this Constitution and the United States Senate and the presidency was set up.
We're in very interesting times, you know, especially because you've now got a guy who's outwardly said he's going to be a dictator for day one. And I don't expect day one to stop for 4 years. But, you know, it's this kind of harassment, this intimidation, this silencing and going after political grievances. And I look at the January 6th committee, you know, we're seeing a lot about Liz Cheney. We're seeing a lot about we're going to go after them and hold them accountable while simultaneously we're going to release the January 6th criminals. It's an interesting flip of what history has brought us.
Oh, absolutely. And it you know, look, I am one that of the belief that a lot of that is pure bluster and that what he will do is he can have it both ways. He can do a little bit. He can get Congress, for instance, to do something on all of his political enemies. He can get Congress to do a little bit, do the Justice Department a little bit, so he can tell his base that he's doing it. And then who are we, Democrats, going to challenge him to say, wait a minute, you promised you were going to do this and you didn't do it. You broke your promises. I mean, it makes so we can't really criticize him for not doing it. And nobody's going to say, well, thank God, you know, congratulations for coming to your senses. Same thing on immigration. All of these millions of people being rounded up. There's no way on God's green earth he's going to be able to do that. But I predict that he's going to do a few things to get a lot of media attention. And Democrats are going to complain about that if they should. Now, if they're rounding up truly a bunch of criminals, Democrats need to be careful.
Yep.
About complaining about it. But when the media says, well, none of these mass immigrations took place, Trump will just ignore it. And from his supporter standpoint, he has rounded up folks, and Democrats are not going to be able to then challenge that to say, well, wait a minute, he didn't do that. He broke his promise to you. We don't want him to keep that promise about that. We don't think it's feasible, and it'll hurt the economy if he does all of that. So, you know, look, I really think he's the master at manipulation when it comes to both the media and the public. So we'll see how this goes. We're going to have to, I think part of this is for Democrats and for folks in this country is just to be vigilant about what he's doing and making sure people know what he's doing and what he's not doing.
Yeah, no, you're right. He's a master con man. You know, I've said numerous times, this is a guy who could sell a woman in a white dress with white gloves a ketchup popsicle while standing in the desert. You know, he's you know, and I know people who have met him. He's charismatic. He's charming. He can sway people. The problem is, you know, he's not very loyal to those people, and they end up usually under the bus, and he walks away with the spoils. I want to hear your thoughts, lastly, before we take a quick break. You know, I just saw this thing that only three state Senate delegations are split, Pennsylvania here, Maine, and Wisconsin, meaning, you know, because we keep saying this is a divided country. You know, we were drawing up lines. This is evidently the one of the only times it's the lowest number since, I guess, they've been directly engaging in Senate races and elections. This is not good, is it?
No, it's not good. I mean, I really think that split delegations work to that state's advantage a lot. People don't fully appreciate, and I tried to talk to my business leaders as well as the labor leaders and others around the state when I was running for reelection, that having a voice in both caucus really can help a state individually. On a larger level, It really shows the division state by state, where it pits a group of states against other states. And I don't think that that's really healthy, but it's a product. One of the things that I've always believed is that while the gerrymandering per se affects usually more state House and state Senate races and congressional races, we're getting to a point that the gerrymandering that's going on in state House and state Senate race, state races, state legislatures, and our U.S. Congress, we're getting to a point that gerrymandering is now affecting office holders statewide, because if you can control the legislature, if you can control your congressional delegation, that's what gets the oxygen. That's what gets the news. And those primaries end up becoming more important than any other primaries, and that filters off to the general election, and it's hard to break through. And I think we're seeing that across the country these days with these split delegations.
No, and I fear this. Our division is going to get much worse as we stop talking to each other. Yesterday on the program, I talked about a Guardian report that said that evidently there is a new real estate app that allows you to check the voter registrations of all of the people in the neighborhood you're looking to move into, so that, you know, you can go to the right neighborhoods and stay away from those people. And that, to me, that's crazy.
We're seeing that phenomenon more and more. People moving into states, moving into neighborhoods, moving out of states, moving out of neighborhoods. It's nothing new, but it has gotten, I think, there's much more of it happening now than there used to be. It's really a sad state of affairs.
It's crazy. I got lots more to ask you. Can you stick around through the break?
Sure.
I appreciate it. We're going to take a quick break, right back with former Alabama Senator Doug Jones. Want to hear your thoughts. Something I've said made you think about something? Kick me an email, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back with Senator Jones.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home of Mino and the Mayor.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy tonight, a low close to 5 above. Looking mostly cloudy for tomorrow, a little warmer, high near 20. A mix of sun and clouds and a high in the upper 20s Sunday. Few flurries Monday, a high in the low 30s, dry and mid-30s for Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. It's 14 degrees right now.
The Dom Salvia Show.
How about this one? Harvey Kay, a Delano Democrat.
The problem with that is that was his mother's family name. You might not realize that he had a father, too.
Come on, man.
Subscribe to my arguments and you can call a Dom Democrat.
All right, I'll take a Dom Democrat. But Franklin Delano Roosevelt, a big favorite here on this show.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Continuing our conversation with former Alabama Senator Doug Jones. You know, one of the things that's made me question where things are going to go is, how are Democrats going to handle this? And Senator Jones, I appreciate you taking some time through the break and sticking with us. You said a second ago that, you know, Trump is having a honeymoon period like never before. And I agree. I think Democrats are trying a different tact. What I said they should have done in 2017, which is kind of kiss dear leaders behind a little bit, give him the Rose Garden ceremonies and signing stuff and, you know, treat him, you know, with kid gloves. Is this the tact you think we're going to see over the next couple of months?
You know, I think you will see a little bit until we get into the confirmation hearings. Gloves are going to come off in some of these confirmation hearings, Rick. I think Democrats right now are still trying to kind of piece all of this together. You know, when this election happened, I think we talked about it in an earlier show. Right after the election, Democrats seemed to be in a circular firing squad. You know, shooting at each other, blaming everybody else on why we lost these races. And it seems so much worse than it really is. And I'm not trying to minimize those losses, but this election was a hell of a lot closer than what people think. And so you've got such a huge swath of this country who did not vote for Donald Trump or his policies. And they're going to ignore that swath of that country. And I think Democrats right now are looking at the analytics. They're looking at the numbers. They're trying to see where they can do things better. I, for one, believe, by and large, our messaging was not as bad as people think. I think it was really a pro-worker, pro-middle class, pro-working class message that could have been tweaked with some very serious things that we needed to talk about. And then we overlooked, you know, inflation. But at the same time, I just think that Democrats are right now are looking to build for the future, to try to go. Hopefully they're going to be going into states like Alabama and other states that we really hadn't been going into, because I think you got to go everywhere in this country now. I don't think you can just focus on battleground states, which is all we've done in the last 8 years or so, is focus on so-called battleground states as they shift. So I think that that is happening, and I think that Democrats are also waiting. I think they're watching. They're sitting back. They're letting the Republicans wring their hands over some of these high-profile nominees that have serious, serious issues. Hegseth, you know, Gabbard, Kennedy, you know, Patel, all of those nominees in particular have serious, serious issues that they've got to overcome. Democrats can't stop them. Okay. But what they can do is when they have these hearings, they can be ready. They can be loaded. They can so make this such that it will be difficult for some Republicans to do anything other than not vote for them, unless they just decide they're not going to follow their constitutional obligation for advice and consent. Yeah. So I think we're in that period right now. And I think the honeymoon is still there, in part because Democrats are finding their footing. I think that will change some with these confirmation hearings. Democrats need, Rick, in my opinion, and I think Mark Elias wrote about this, you know, the lawyer extraordinaire for Democrats, that we need to be the opposition, not the resistance this time. We need to be the opposition to let people know that if there are things that will help our constituencies, we want to be a part of it. And we will help, try to forge those opportunities. But all of some of the crazy stuff that we expect to see, we're going to be the opposition and pushback.
Yeah, no, ultimately, his nominees, I've taken a position that you should give him whatever he wants. You know, he won the election. The victor goes to spoils. And the crazy people that he's put forth, you know, put him in there. And what comes out of it, as you've said, you know, be the opposition. Be there to point out, going, hey, is this when RFK Jr. does some of the crazy things that he's going to do around vaccines, and we start seeing mumps and measles and all of this stuff coming back, as we're starting to see, you know, going, is this the country we want? You know, is this the policy you voted for? You know, Kash Patel going to use the FBI as you know, the secret police for Donald Trump when these things happen? I think you have to be there pointing this stuff out and defending against it, but making sure that the red hat folks who voted for this stuff, asking them, is this what you voted for? Is this what you thought you were going to get? And I'll guarantee the answer is no.
No, I agree with you on that. I think the challenge going forward on that is being able to reach those folks in the platforms where they are getting their information. And I don't mean just going, you know, Democrats going on Fox News. I mean having platforms where people are tuning in on a regular basis to where we can get that information. Because there's so many people in this country, Rick, that they don't follow politics like we do. They don't care about politics the way we do. So they're not listening to just purely political shows. They're listening to a lot of other stuff.
Yep.
They don't care. They are tuned out. They are the, and I don't like to use the word uninformed, because I think that's an insult to people. It's just that they have other interests that they listen to all the time, and they get their information in a different way. And then we've got to figure that out. The Republicans have been for 40 years have building that infrastructure, and we have not even invested hardly any in it.
No, I've been doing this show 20 years, saying the exact same thing right. For nearly 20 years, because I have watched, I've had a front row seat to the right wing building that infrastructure and reaching into the working class and selling them what I believe is fool's gold. Because
right.
What is coming is going to harm, especially where I live in rural America. You know, if the tariffs that Trump is talking about actually happen, agricultural communities are going to be hit first. If he does all the immigration stuff that he's saying he's going to do, it's rural communities are going to get hit, because you're not going to get the cheap labor that you're accustomed to. If they go right. after Medicaid, your rural hospital is going to go under. If they go after privatizing the postal service, rural delivery is going to take the hit. It's rural communities. It's the red hat communities that I believe are going to suffer the most. And I think you have to be there saying, this is why.
Right. No, I think that that's absolutely right. And there's a lot of discussions going on. You know, one of the things that's going to happen, you know, Democrats going to select a new chairperson or combination. There may be two chairs. I'm hearing a little bit about that. That happened in the past where you had a chair that was kind of the overall chair that would deliver messages and help raise money. And then you had somebody working the day-to-day operations of the Democratic Party. I think that's actually a good system if they would consider something like that. But that I think the new chair is going to have to give some new directions. And I'm hoping that whoever the new chair of the Democratic Party might be, it is that we've got to have, going back to the old Howard Dean strategy of 50 states, we've got to be everywhere all the time. We can't just be in the battleground states or a state where there's a new candidate coming up just during election time. Yep. It's got to be a work where we're doing the hard work 365 days a year, delivering the messages, just like you've been doing on your show for a long, long time now. We got to have a lot more out there on both media like your platform, but also on social media and some others, even different kind of podcasts that are not just strictly identified as purely political podcasts.
No, ultimately, I've been saying for a long time, we lost, you know, rural Democrats. You know, Tom Harkin was one of the greatest people I ever met. And the stories that he told me were, you know, were fabulous about, you know, rural communities and the work that he was doing, losing John Tester and Sherrod Brown. Those are huge losses because those are people who understand the working class and have those connections. And, you know, Democrats used to have a lot of those. And right. Somehow they've lost because I think the party overall kind of has lost the way a little bit, where we've focused on what's been shoved at us as cultural issues, not even, you know, issues of our choosing, but issues that you had to defend. And then because of the right wing powerful echo chamber, you end up having to take these positions that maybe, you know, aren't the center of your focus, but it's kind of thrust upon you and it sucks the oxygen out of the room for everything else.
Well, I think that's part of it, but I also think that some of these positions that are attributed to Democrats are attributed to Democrats only because the right-wing media rage machine and infrastructure.
That's what I said.
Elevates those, yep. Okay?
That was so my point.
Yeah, they elevate those, and they don't have that rage machine doesn't emphasize all the work, for instance, that Joe Biden did on infrastructure, all the work he did on the CHIPS Act, all the work he did for veterans, all the things he did to bring the economy up from the ground up in the middle out. That's not what that is being broadcast. What's being broadcast is the far left. And so we are being defined that way because we're not in those platforms to try to challenge it. Yep. It's complicated. It's not a simple thing to do, and it's damn sure not something we're going to be able to get out of in the next 6 months or a year.
No, but you know, that message that you just laid out, that was a pretty good campaign message that a lot of people did not get. You know, we right. talked about it through the whole campaign season. It's about making lives better. It's yeah. about, you know, the places that are going to be as opposed to the places that used to be. There's a lot that could have been done, and yet, you know, you had Beyonce concerts and Bruce Springsteen. And look, I love both of them, but the average working class person, they can't afford a ticket to that stuff.
Yeah, and you know, there's another piece of this too, Rick, and I don't know if we've talked about this or not, but when it really comes down to it, One of the number one issues on everybody's mind this year, and it was in response to a pollster's question, okay? It wasn't that they just blurted it out, although they were probably blurted out this way. They would say, the economy is number one. And so we would counter and say, well, wait a minute. Inflation is coming down. GDP is up. Unemployment is down. The economy, manufacturing is up. We give them all these statistics to show that the economy is really doing pretty well. But what these folks were really meaning is I'm still having to pay high prices.
Right.
And it was all about prices that we're having to pay at the moment, not the inflation rate up or down, because prices didn't go down hardly any. after inflation started subsiding, and that's because a lot of the corporations decided to make sure that they kept their profits up. But here's something that I don't think people fully appreciated. And that is, Rick, unless you were born probably in the early to mid-60s, we're old enough to drive a car in the mid-70s when gasoline went through the roof and there were long gas lines. We had a problem. We had inflation that was incredible. Raging. We had interest rates over 20%. It cost Jimmy Carter a landslide election to Ronald Reagan. Unless you lived in that time, you've never really experienced inflation. It's been gradual every year. It's been so gradual, you don't really notice it. You don't see it. You see it at the gas pump, but you get used to it because it's not spiking way up and all these things, except it'll come back down. You're not used to it. And now all of a sudden, this worldwide inflation caught everybody surprised. And now every major political party that was in power across the globe got kicked out this year.
Yeah.
Because people were not used to it. They didn't know what was going on. And we did not do a good job of trying to explain and talk to folks about that and how that prices were adjusting. We were going to try to get prices down and literally addressing their concerns. Instead, we talked wonky numbers.
No. And look, you know, during the last 2 years, I've been talking about my grandparents who, you know, the later part of their working lives were through that 70s era where you had the stagflation, you had the 20% interest rates, but their union contracts all had cost of living adjustments. So as inflation was going up, their wages were going up. And I think the 1 year my grandfather said he got 3 or 4 raises in 1 year. It was like 75 when you had just inflation going crazy. So their standard of living didn't take a major hit. In fact, the inflation made their lives actually better because the mortgage that they took out in the 60s, by the end of the stagflation era, it was a day's pay to pay their mortgage.
Yeah.
We didn't benefit from that. So, you know, inflation's not great, but it's not bad if you have wages that keep up. We just didn't have a labor movement capable of keeping wages up.
That's absolutely right. It's 100%, Rick. We didn't do that. And in fact, we did just, as a country, we did just the opposite, starting with Ronald Reagan and the trickle-down theory. Joe Biden did a lot to try to reverse that, to try to make sure that trickle-down trickled away. And I'm afraid it's going to come back now. But Reagan started this whole process from where the top gets richer and the folks, and it will trickle down, and everyone knows it never happened. That's why when inflation hit this time, it hurt people so bad, was because of that difference. The wage gap that we have in this country was stunning.
Yeah, I mean, you got Bezos, you got Musk, you got Zuckerberg. The three of them together are worth $1 trillion.
Right.
Something is broken in our system, and we've been focused at the wrong things. So for me, you know, last line of questioning as we wrap this up, you know, obviously Republicans are going to get their way. They're going to get their big tax cut bill, I think, pushed through. I think they're going to get their wet dream wish list at the beginning. You know, how do Democrats use this? What do you see the messaging for the coming year being as some of this bad stuff happens? What are you looking for?
Well, I'm looking for them to provide the American people with the alternative, to tell them factually what this will do, what this will cause, how this will affect their daily lives. Just like we were talking about just then, when the rich get richer, that's never trickled down to folks. You know, the tax bill is likely to pass, whatever that might be, without any Democratic input, because they can do that without changing the Senate rules. They can do it under the reconciliation rules. It's going to be interesting to me, Rick, to see whether or not the Republicans in the Senate do two things. One, are they going to get rid of the filibuster so they can push this stuff through? Or two, and secondly, and this is important too, are they going to get rid of what is known as the blue slip so that they can block, a home state senator can block any judge within their home state? That's creating this red-blue judiciary as well. But I think Democrats have to be that loyal opposition, and they have to talk about it every day. They've got to be on the Senate floor talking about it, in a way that the people will understand. That's what I saw in the Senate happening all the time with Republicans. They were on the floor all the time giving their talks, and we've got to do more town halls across the country, and we've got to do it in areas that went big for Donald Trump and Republicans. We need to go into some of these congressional districts. We need to go into these states and not be shy about doing it, to talk to people and listen.
Absolutely. You got to get a dirty Carhartt, not one that just came off the rack.
That's right. You got it.
It's just that simple. Doug, I appreciate the thoughts. I appreciate your input. I look forward to having you on during the next year. But to you and your family, the best wishes for the holiday. Thanks so much.
Rick, it's always a pleasure. And make sure you know that so many of us out here that are friends of yours and friends of this show will keep you and your family in our thoughts and prayers this holiday season.
Thanks so much, Doug. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy.
Former Alabama Senator Doug Jones. Want to hear your thoughts. What are you expecting in the new year? I want to hear it. Rick at therickssmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1860. That was the day South Carolina announced the Union is dissolved. The pronouncement was a direct response to the presidential election of Abraham Lincoln a month earlier. South Carolina was the first of 11 states to secede from the Union. They were resolved to preserve their system of slave labor. Many debate the reasons why and will cite states' rights or tariffs and taxes as primary causes. But South Carolina issued a declaration of immediate causes just 4 days after its state legislature passed the Ordinance of Secession. According to James Luen, author of The Confederate and Neo-Confederate Reader, this declaration opposed Northern states' rights of refusal to support slavery. It stated that there was, quote, an increasing hostility on the part of non-slaveholding states to the institution of slavery, that the Northern states had failed to fulfill their constitutional obligations by interfering with the return of fugitive slaves to bondage. South Carolinians were also upset that they could no longer travel to northern states with their slaves in tow. They were furious that New England states allowed black men to vote. This declaration complains that northern states have, quote, denounced as sinful the institution of slavery. They have permitted the open establishment among them of societies whose avowed object is to disturb the peace and illoin the property of the citizens of other states. They have encouraged and assisted thousands of our slaves to leave their homes, and those who have remained have been incited by emissaries, books, and pictures to servile insurrection. Other Confederate states would craft similar documents. The Civil War to end slavery would begin in Charleston, South Carolina, the following April.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Just got to tell you, I'm really a big fan of Doug Jones. Shame that Alabama chose literally the dumbest guy in the U.S. Senate in Tommy Tuberville over Doug Jones. I think Doug is brilliant. Look, I think had Kamala Harris won, he could have been Attorney General. I think he's a bright guy, good guy. And sadly, you know, bright guys, good guys, don't seem to be winning much in our politics right now. And it's going to be an interesting 4 years. Look, at the end of the day, I think, as I've been saying, the suffering that will come because of what this administration, this incoming administration is going to do, will awaken us, I believe, to what needs to be done. Or at least I hope. Look, I don't want this. I don't think any of us do. But we know that there's some chaos coming, and it's how we react. And you know, honestly, for me, the this holiday season, you know, what I'm grateful for is that I think we're going to see a lot of people coming together. I think this administration, I think Donald Trump will be the catalyst that brings America back together. I do. And I know, but really? I think so. I think what's going to happen, I think Elon Musk and his crew, Vivek Ramaswamy, I think that their sheer disregard for compassion, empathy, humanity, I think that's going to bleed through. And I think even the Red Hats, who are the most loyal of Trump, when they're affected by what is going to potentially come, and as these ideas keep coming out, it may not happen, but the ideas are going to be front and center. What conservatives have been saying to themselves in the back rooms, what they wrote in Project 2025, what Musk and Ramaswamy want going forward, the fact that we're still talking about a government shutdown around Christmas. Merry Christmas! Happy New Year! We're dysfunctional. Because the weird thing is, I have conversations all the time with people because I engage with people. I think you have to. I want to be around people with differing opinions because I want to hear what they think. I want to be around people who have different solutions because out of that maybe come some good things. But I've read a lot of Project 2025. These are not good solutions for working people. They are great solutions for corporatists. They are amazing solutions for wannabe authoritarians. And all I want for Christmas is a functional liberal democracy where working people have a fair shot to earn a fair day's pay for a fair day's work, where families have an opportunity to work hard, play by the rules, and actually get ahead, where under every Christmas tree is hope and opportunity, in every household the ability to put food on the table, clothes on the kids' back, and a dream for the future. And sadly, what's happened, and the pandemic kind of brought a lot of this to the head, but understand, it wasn't great before. A lot of the problems that we're talking about have only been magnified because of the pandemic. We were always heading here. We were always going to get to this boiling point where working people can't make ends meet, where wages don't keep up and costs are through the roof. We were always going to get here. They just had us in the boiling water like frogs, not really paying attention. I think Doug Jones pointed that out. Again, it was the pandemic that accelerated what was going to happen because income inequality has been a thing for a while. The story that I talked about yesterday on the program of a guy who said, look, you know, my parents in the 50s, they were able to have mom stay home. Dad went to work at a regular working class kind of job, put kids through college, bought homes, did all of these things on one income. Now you can't do it on two, three, maybe four. And what's Project 2025's solution? Well, get those kids to work. Put them in the factories and the mines again. Have them compete with mom and dad for poverty wages. 2025 is going to be an interesting year. And if there's something that I want in this holiday season, I want awareness. I wish for people to pay attention to others, to a return of compassion and empathy and concern, a return of community, a return of people caring about each other, regardless of what hat you wear. And as I told the story of after my wife's accident, that's the world I want to live in. Within 30, 45 seconds, there was a trauma nurse at her side caring for her. There were people who were immediately, coming to her aid, directing traffic so EMS can get through. The community worked. People got through. The system did. And it didn't matter who you voted for, what hat you wore, what you did. No, it was being part of something. So for me in the new year, it's about being part of revitalizing that American dream, revitalizing that prosperity of a working class, a proud working class. That's what it's in it for me. But I want to hear your thoughts. And also, I want to wish everyone the happiest of holiday seasons. As I said at the beginning, this is our last program of the year. We will be back on January 6th. This is our traditional holiday break, where we just kind of step back, rejuvenate, re-energize, and especially this year, which has been very taxing on me and on the program. But I want to wish everyone the best, happiness, health, and all of that under your tree and in the new year. And I look forward to everyone back here again on January 6th as we take on what challenges lie ahead, and we do it together. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here on January 6th.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com.
This is 97.9 WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a civic media radio station.
This is a special report from ABC News. Government shutdown watch. I'm Richard Cantu. The vote, 366 to 34. The House passing a stopgap funding measure to keep the federal government open through March 14th. Now goes to the Senate, where Majority Leader Charles Schumer says they'll vote on it tonight.
We didn't get everything we wanted, but I think if you look at the vote in the House, people felt pretty good. It was virtually unanimous.
The bill does not raise the debt limit. President-elect Trump and billionaire Elon Musk were demanding that.
I'm glad that the Republican leadership and the Republican colleagues in the House were able to tell Elon Musk he was wrong when it comes to debt ceiling.
Kentucky's Mitch McConnell, stepping down as Senate Republican leader, had warned Republicans would pay a political price.
I don't care to count how many times I've reminded our colleagues and our House counterparts how harmful it is to shut the government down.
This is ABC News.